George in Derry. Morning, George.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, George.
You have to excuse me. I'm a bit of a cold this morning, so excuse the croak in my voice.
So we're devoting the whole programme today to the NHS, the plans that the government has. Go ahead, George.
I'll tell you what it is. I was listening to Mr. Compton there, and he was talking about, you know, specialisms and all of that sort of thing, and centralisation.
Yeah.
And centralising these specialist services. Now, the point about that is, it's kind of puzzling me, because we're always told that if a person has a heart attack or a stroke, especially those two areas of health concern, speed is of the essence. And if a neighbour of mine has a heart attack or a stroke and they have to be taken to Belfast for the specialist attention, that's 2 hours up the road. That waste of time could the difference in whether they live or die.
Okay.
And that's what I can't understand about the fact that they're kind of promoting this kind of, you know, specialism in particular centres.
And let's see what John Compton says.
It's not the central point in Northern Ireland. How do you define centralisation? What's in my mind as well?
I think it's good, isn't it, that we walk through this today. So essentially, John, I know you're slightly distracted there. So essentially what our caller is saying, look, he doesn't understand that if it takes 2 hours to go up the road to one of these centralised services and you're passing a hospital along the way, is that not time lost? So therefore your chances of survival decrease. That's what he's asking.
Yeah, I can well understand that. But of course, nowadays with the emergency services and the ambulance services, so much can be done in the ambulance in terms of an immediate intervention to get you to the right place. And of course, your caller is right that time is important. But again, it's the research about what level of time, how much time. The evidence is clear that, you know, provided you're not asking people to travel 24 hours sort of from one place to another, that you can actually really do the intervention very well.
So in layman's terms, John.
I would come back to just the example I said about the interventional cardiology, which is based in Derry and Belfast. You know, I think everybody would assume and would accept that if you had a cardiac event which required you to have emergency interventional cardiology, that it's a serious event. Yet we can do it in the two centres.
So in layman's terms, John, for me to understand this, rather than going to the closest hospital where there may be, you know, a general surgeon, it is much better taking another half hour or to go to a surgeon who's doing it every day of the week, because you are likely to be treated better by a much more experienced
Absolutely.
Surgeon. Is that it?
Absolutely. That's it. That's it in a nutshell. And if you look at then people who go to that level of service and you follow them after they've been to that service, do they recover better? Does the illness do less damage to them long term? And is their survivability greater? And it is.
Does that answer your question, George?
Well, first of all, the point that Mr. Compton is making there about the fact that, you know, the sort of the early intervention by well-trained paramedics or whatever, I mean, if that works, that's great. But it's still, you know, this idea of having to get maybe a travel for 2 hours. The other point I was making was about, you know, how do you define centralisation in Northern Ireland? Centralisation is usually something that happens in Belfast. The service provision is in Belfast. I know it's a higher level of population up there and all of that, but that doesn't really serve the people of the Derry, the North West, or Fermanagh, or places like that very well.
So that's a genuine question, actually, and a good question.
I think it's a very fair question, and centralisation doesn't mean everything's in Belfast. It just means fewer of the facilities that we currently have as hospitals do some of the specialised
activity.
So
they could be anywhere.
So they could be anywhere.
But
so
actually, his point is, because the greater population is in Belfast, why wouldn't you centralise them in Belfast?
Well, for example, if again, back on the interventional cardiology sort of side of things, just to use it as the example, and it's in Derry and it's in Belfast. And it's in Derry and Belfast because it's there. You probably numerically could put it in one place. But in Northern Ireland, that would never work because geographically it would be impossible to organise. So you have it in two places. So if you were talking about stroke services and say you decided that you would have three of them, well, then you would locate those centres around the province so that you would have, clearly there'd be one in Belfast, of course there would be, but you would also have a centres outside Belfast. It's that sort of debate that needs to take place.
Okay, Fred and Dromore. Morning, Fred.
Hello, how are you?
Go ahead.
No, I think this report is like all other reports that it must be put in a file and read sometimes and brought sometimes not. It seems to me it's just like the Strong Nurse Agreement, just more of the same.
Well, the difference is, this time, you have got an agreement between Sinn Féin and the DUP. So you've got the government in Northern Ireland, both those parties, supporting this. So they've no excuses if it doesn't happen, because they control the money.
Yes, but they control the money, but where are they going to get the money come from? Did anyone ever ask, where did the money be wasted in the health service? If we take the last major IRA atrocity, namely OMA, how many millions of pounds did it take to repair the broken bodies of that? That's never mentioned. There's so much money wasted in the past. It shouldn't have been wasted.
Fred, thank you. I was given, John, and there's some criticism of me this morning for interrupting the... I think there's criticism, for example, from a senior Sinn Féin press officer for how often I interrupted the health minister around waiting lists. I could see that on Twitter this morning. He's counted the number of times I interrupted her. All I would say to that press officer this morning is count how many people contact this programme saying, I am on a waiting list. I'm waiting a year. I'm waiting 2 years. So I will, Mr. Sinn Féin press officer, interrupt the minister about what her targets are for people living in this country, about when she's going to deliver short term for people sitting on a waiting list. We had a child on a waiting list contacted this programme. Serious tooth decay, serious pain, was not seen within time. We have other people telling us that they've been diagnosed with life-threatening diseases and they cannot get operations in time. So that's why I will continue, Mr. Sinn Féin, press officer, to interrupt the minister on waiting lists. Having said that, there are targets, and it would be unfair for me to suggest for one second that the minister has not put down targets and when she will deliver things outside of waiting lists, John. Because, for example, she has said that by March 2017, they will improve access and resilience and support the developments of new models of care, make significant investment in primary care. Now, this is where a statistic you give me this morning, John, just blew my mind. And it's maybe why the minister is going to focus on improving our GP services. 1 in 10 medical admissions to hospital are because elderly people don't take the medicine they should. Is that right?
Yes, there are real problems with compliance with medicine. You find people, often as we grow older, we're taking complicated medicines. We're taking maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 different medicines in a day. And if we're not careful about how we take those medicines, it can cause all sorts of difficulties and problems. I'm sure many people will have known someone in their family who gets a bit confused and they're not very well. And at the root of it is not just the illness, but also how they're dealing with their pharma. So, I mean,
pharma means medicine.
Medicine,
right?
Yeah, medicine. Now, what I really like about the Ben Gore report on the minister is the emphasis on primary general practice and on community services close to home, because there's a real opportunity here to improve the quality of care that we all experience by those improvements. And so she has indicated increases in GP training, increases in advanced practitioner nurses. All of those things are really very, very brilliant opportunities to change it.
And Michelle O'Neill has put specific dates in this. Increased GP training places by March 2017, ensuring that every GP practice has a named district nurse, a named health advisor, a named social worker, by March 2017.
Yeah, all of these things are really, really good, because that's where we all experience our care. You know, everybody knows the GP that they're on. The building block for the whole of the health and social care system is the GP list. The GP list doesn't change very much. You know, the people don't change their GP a lot in Northern Ireland, and that's really important that we have that emphasis. You know, the ability to have things like near patient blood testing, management of diabetes in a different way, using different technology to monitor people's condition, all of that in a primary care setting, in proper buildings, proper opportunities to do that, is a very transformatory thing in terms of how we deliver health and social care. And I there's a big emphasis in the Ben Gore report and a big emphasis from the ministry yesterday, and that really is at the core of how you change things. I know there's always a huge debate about hospitals and people get very emotionally attached to hospitals, but actually what really changes the quality of your health is emphasis on prevention and then better primary and social care support.
Primary care means your doctor.
Your doctor, your GP,
okay.
And your ability to...
And the Minister very much has set herself targets of when she will deliver in terms of resourcing those doctors.
That is to be applauded, because the truth of the matter is that the general practice model we have is rather outdated in terms of how it's organised. Equally, it's really struggling. It's really struggling in terms of the ability to retain, train and recruit people to be general practitioners. And so it's important that we do two things. We recruit, as she's talked about, in terms of our plan, and also that we change the offering so that people can see their district nurse closer to the GP surgery and all of those sorts of things.
I just don't want to... We've loads of calls here and we need to keep moving, but I just don't want to move off that shocking statistic that you've given us this morning. 1 in 10 elderly people admitted to hospital are admitted because they've taken the wrong medicine.
Well, certainly that was the advice I was getting when I was in post.
Mightn't be up to date.
Mightn't be
my
up
goodness.
To date. But the other issue...
Deeply worrying, actually.
But the other issue that you can look at is people... This is, again, the primary care thing. People who've got bad chests. Let's use the language that everybody will understand. Who've got a bad chest. And are really quite severely affected by that. If you have better control of the drugs they take and their compliance with the taking of the drug, supported by an advanced practitioner nurse, you'll reduce the numbers of times they're admitted to hospital from possibly 6 or 8 times a year to once or twice a year. I mean, the changes that you can make in how you handle and think about hospitals when you get a better general practice supported system with proper trained nurses is really quite profound. And that's why it's very important that isn't lost. I know there will always be the hospital.
It'll be waiting lists, it'll be hospitals.
Yeah, but
here's the big picture government's looking at.
Please really don't lose that debate.
Okay, Ray in Portrush. Morning, Ray. Morning, Ray.
Good morning.
You're impressed by Michelle O'Neill today.
Yes, I was indeed. I thought she was very sincere about what she was about to do, and she had it. In a way, she has given an awful lot of thought to it, and I think that it's up to people to take responsibility for their own health. There's an awful lot of people who don't care. They're putting pressure on the health service. And I mean, I'm 77, and when I was growing up, we had a doctor who was 3 miles away. We had to get on a bicycle and go to him and pay him for whatever medicine or whatever we needed. But now we have a good health service, but it has been abused at times, because I had an incident there about a year ago. My husband had a slight stroke last Christmas, and he was in hospital, and they done very well for him here down the causeway. He got in within 20 minutes. If it hadn't been that, he would have had a major one. And I must say thank you to that hospital. But what I noticed is when we were in there one Friday night, he actually had been given a tablet, and it had disagreed with him. I wasn't sure what to do, and I went and took him into accident emergency. Now, we were the only couple apart, one other couple of elderly people that was there. It was all younger people. I'm not talking about 16, 17-year-olds. I'm talking about other ones.
Right.
Bashing the faces of each other and coming in to get help.
Ray, I'm only going to say thank you and move on, because we have so many people to talk to, but thank you so much for calling us. Mark H. Durkin with us today. STLP's Mark H. Durkin. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Do you welcome the Minister's proposals?
Well, I said very early yesterday that we were given this a cautious welcome, and that's exactly the same as it happens as what the BMA are now saying, and I don't think anyone, not even you, Stephen, would dispute that they do know what they're talking about. I think the report itself, the Bengoa report, there is a lack of detail in that, but then again, Bengoa wasn't commissioned to provide details, and I very much expected or anticipated that detail would emerge in the Minister's statement to the Assembly yesterday, but it didn't. I thought that's what she would have been doing for the past 3 months, and yesterday we did question that lack of detail, as you have questioned to an extent that lack of detail this morning. But I don't want that questioning to then be interpreted by yourself. I know it's certainly going to be portrayed by the government parties as us, as the opposition parties, being opposed.
So do you have detail?
The care system, because that's certainly not...
Does the SDLP have detail?
Pardon?
Do you have detailed policy worked out?
Well, the thing here is, we haven't got this department. are not the minister. We haven't even got access to see what budget lines are available.
So you're not ready for government.
There's a distinct lack of transparency around budget and many other things.
Okay.
That's something
we
have aired.
Fair enough.
But that's just,
so let's ask you a similar... Hold on.
Yeah.
Let's ask you similar questions to what I asked Mr. Butler. Would you support the centralisation of acute services, like stroke and heart services?
I mean, I am on record as saying we have to listen to what the experts are saying. What is in this report is nothing dramatically new. It seems to be a case of old wine and new
So is that a yes, Mark? You would support the centralisation of acute services, yes or no, like heart and stroke services?
Where the experts are saying that this has to be done, that this will deliver better outcomes for patients, we will support it. The fact that this report is saying things almost identical to transforming your care makes it pretty evident to me that the report is not wrong.
Well, look,
there's no point in commissioning another report that's going to tell us the exact same thing.
Okay.
Our questions aren't so much around the plan. Our questions are around how the government is going to implement the plan.
Okay, one second.
And that's where there is a distinct lack of clarity, particularly around costings.
All right, one second. We'll come to that in a second. You need to have a wee chat with your partners in opposition, the Ulster Unionist Party. We saw your leader, Colm Eastwood, stand on the platform of the Ulster Unionist Party conference there just a few days ago. So here's what your partners in opposition, the Ulster Unionist Party, you think that that acute services should be centralised. Here's the health spokesperson's view. Here's the Ulster Unionist Party view on centralising services. Listen to this. Would you centralise some NE services?
I think we've already seen that. I think it's something that they've...
You support it, do you?
Sorry?
You support the centralisation of A&E units, do you?
No.
He would not to say with centralised mental health, but it was two no's there. No. You need to have a wee word with him.
Well, what I do have to tell you is our support for it isn't unconditional either. Like, I mean, it will depend on more resources being given to the ambulance service. We need ambulances to be able to get there faster. We need them to be better equipped to give essential care when they arrive. And we need to be sure that there are adequate minor injuries units in every location as well, so that people can go there whenever they don't require the more in-depth care that was alluded to by John and other contributors on your show this morning. I mean, there's no disputing the need for transformation of the healthcare system, and no one recognises that more than the
Which departments do you think should have less money, Mark, in order to give more money to the health service? Because that's what this is going to come down to.
Yeah, well, you see, we don't know how much more money, and that's what we were asking yesterday. I've been on record before when Simon Hamilton particularly was health minister. I accused him of knowing the cost of everything and the value of nothing. Yesterday, Michelle O'Neill, and since she has come into office, to be fair to her, has demonstrated that she's fully aware of the value of our health service. But yesterday, she seemed to know the cost of nothing. And I mean, it's very hard to support a plan when there is no plan. I wouldn't even call what we heard from the minister yesterday a plan. It is more of a vision. She has said that she would use the...
You've no plan, do you?
She would... Well, we want to see this plan implemented, and our question...
But there was no plan.
How it is going to be implemented.
But there was no plan.
We haven't got answers
to... You've just said there was no plan.
Well, exactly.
And then you've just said you want to see it implemented.
How is this vision going to become a plan that is implementable? And there have been no answers to that.
What's your plan?
Well, our plan is to see the Bangor report's recommendations implemented. I don't think the government are going to do that. I heard a bit of the minister on earlier. She said she had this full support of the executive. That's the first time this has happened. Now, I think I'm safe enough in saying that Transforming Your Care 5 years ago was endorsed by the executive. And fair enough, there were other parties there. The SDLP were there, the UUP were there, the Alliance were there. But I was on the executive myself for almost 3 years, and I could count on one hand the times that Sinn Féin and the DUP didn't get things their
Mark,
way.
Thank you.
In the executive.
Thank you very much. We've 6 minutes left. Loads of callers. Tracy in Belfast. Morning, Tracy.
Hi there.
We're going to try to run through these as quick as possible, get as many on air as you can. Go ahead, Tracy.
Right, my point is, I don't think NHS consultants should be allowed to carry out private work. The main reason being, when they're doing the private work, they're not working for the NHS. And also, what's the incentive for them to shorten waiting lists if people are going to pay for them.
John?
Well, the first thing is that legally people do their job, consultants do their job, what they do in their spare time is what they do in their spare time, and that you can't legislate for people doing things in their spare time. If the thinking is that people don't do their NHS work and do private work instead, then that's a serious breach, and I don't believe that occurs as far as all of that is concerned.
Okay, Florence. Morning, Florence.
Good morning, Stephen.
Very quickly for me.
The South West Acute Hospital in Enniskillen has been declared the most modern and up-to-date hospital in Europe. And yet, when my aunt in her 80s was diagnosed with breast cancer, I had to drive her to Alton McGelvin. She had her breast removed on Tuesday, and I took her home again on Thursday. She didn't mind that, but later on, the cancer occurred again. And when she went into the hospital in Enniskillen, she still had to go down to Alton McGelvin for bone tests, and to Belfast for blood tests. So it seems strange that they want to centralise the hospitals in Derry and in Belfast when we have the most modern hospital here in Enniskillen. And the reason I have been told why we don't get the consultants to Enniskillen is because when a doctor becomes consultant, his children are at university and he wants to stay in the city rather than come down to Enniskillen.
Florence, thank you. We'll hold on to that. Dennis in Whitehead. Morning, Dennis.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, every time you speak to a health minister, somewhere in the conversation, it'll come up about the brilliant, hard-working staff who work so hard, and indeed, as I said this morning again. I'm going to make a very short point. If our NHS nurses are so highly valued by the minister, perhaps sometimes you could explain to us why the Band 5 nurse is paid £566 a year less in Northern Ireland than her counterpart across the water, and why a Band 6 nurse is paid £701 a year less than her counterpart across the water. He said they're supposed to be highly valued, but they're not highly valued enough to pay them an equal pay with the people across the water.
John?
I think it's a fair point. Parity of pay is very important, and I certainly wouldn't support situations where you have that discrepancy.
Did that not happen under your watch, that discrepancy?
No. The pay awards, be clear about it, pay awards are departmentally agreed and ministerially sanctioned. So,
but under your watch, we didn't hear you shout about it too much, did we?
Well, behind the scenes, I think I made pretty strong views about what I thought about what people should get paid.
Really? Well, you can tell us about that now publicly. You think it's a disgrace, do you?
No, I don't think it's a disgrace.
What do you think?
I think it should be parity. I think we have a parity arrangement for the rest of the UK. Lots of staff are paid parity, and I think it's really, really complicated if you don't pay parity.
Okay, Eddie and Antrim. Morning, Eddie.
My point was, I have another point too. My point was that the issue with the minister's statement instead of a 10-year plan is, you know, she's not going to be in a position in 5 years' time whenever the next elections come.
Well, all she can do is start the process, can't she?
That's it. You know, if she does a good job and she reforms it, then DUP will take it over.
Okay, Eddie, thank you. Owen and Coleraine, morning, Owen.
Hello.
Quickly for me, quickly.
Yes, I want to point out the confusion that appears in John Compton's mind and others on the difference between centralised specialised services, which we all support, and local acute services. Because of the rising elderly population, needs local services for their admissions with multi-morbidity diseases. 65% of acute admissions are in the age of 65 above. So John Compton says quite rightly that you get better outcomes from centralised specialised services, such as cardiac surgery, that's great, but you don't get better outcomes from admitting elderly people with multi-morbidity, such as heart failure and COPD.
Okay, John?
I think I made the point that I agree. There are two groups of people that get treated in hospital, those who need, if you like, acute specialist services, and those who are older who need support in terms of chronic conditions, and local hospitals are best placed for that.
Last question, John. Is this promising from the minister? Have we a lot to be optimistic about in the minister's plan?
I believe so. I really genuinely believe so. We're all committed to having a modern health and social care system. This plan gives us that opportunity.
John Compton, thank you very much indeed.